ABC Radio Australia.
Katarina Tewa is the Vice President of the Australian Association for Pacific Studies. She's an Associate Professor at the Australian National University. And she's written a rather scathing piece for the latest Australian Foreign Affairs magazine on Australia and its actions on climate change and its relations with the Pacific. She's accused Australia of taking a paternalistic and narrow approach on its development and security policies in relation to the region, and says that Australia has all the resources, technology, evidence and information it needs to act on climate change. It just needs the political will and leadership, she says. Now, she's currently in Palau, where she's on a study tour with university students, and I asked her what she made of those comments we just heard about climate change in the Pacific and the need for Australia to assist, or else other countries will, quote, take our place.
The thought is somewhat in the right place, but it's very much framed through a security and defence kind of lens, which really, really does not reflect the experiences on the ground of Pacific Islanders. It's sort of an alarmist kind of approach, which doesn't give a lot of dignity or agency to Pacific leaders or to Pacific communities. So it advocates for action on climate change and for policies that support, you know, both domestic and in international action in that arena. It isn't helpful to take a neocolonial or patronizing or even management approach to these issues. Pacific leaders have been talking about climate change and the need for action on climate change for 30 years. It's not an overnight thing, but the alarm is rising because of this perception of Chinese influence in the Pacific, which, you know, isn't just about security, but is also about economic influence and a whole range of other things. So those two themes are kind of colliding, I suppose, in the Pacific. And what happens in the same way that happens with Pacific people all the time, when geopolitics are being played out across the region, their interests, their issues, the things that matter to Pacific people on the ground are just swept aside. So it is pretty paternalistic to say, let's be careful, we're going to be flooded by climate change refugees. That's not what Pacific communities are thinking. They've been talking about the fact that they're not drowning, they're fighting for a few years now. Australia's language about the need for the Pacific to develop and to grow is also patronizing, because it assumes a deficit exists in the Pacific, that Pacific people don't have a capacity to grow and thrive and be innovative, which is a bunch of nonsense, because Pacific people haven't inhabited this region for thousands of years and have survived all manner of calamities and are doing just fine.
Well, you talk about the resilience of the Pacific, so I wonder what you make of Australia's Foreign Minister Maurice Payne's response when she was asked about these reports of climate change refugees perhaps inundating Australia. Her response was to say that Australia has a practical focus on climate change in the region, with its financing facility available for Pacific countries to be able to use for things like climate adaptation and climate change resilience projects. Isn't that kind of approach, that helping hand, what you would like to see from Australia without it being paternalistic, just assisting?
You know, the Australian step up in the Pacific, which provides for a whole range of support for adaptation, mitigation, climate programs in the region. There is a perception that Australia's aid and development agenda is primarily serving Australia's foreign policy and other related interests in the Pacific. So even though from Australia's perspective, it would be seen as we're supporting at least the goals of what would have been coming out of that funding, but we're just doing it in our own way, because geopolitical interests are tied to aid and development support in the region, it means there could still be concern about whose actual interests some of these policies and programs are serving. And across the region, it's not that people aren't grateful for that kind of development and support, but it needs to be shaped by Pacific Islander agendas and Pacific Islander interests, things that come from the ground rather than policies and programs that Pacific people have to cut and paste into. It's a universal approach that doesn't account for the nuances and complexities, especially with respect to culture on the ground. So whether you're talking about climate policies or gender policies that Australia is trying to support and roll out in the region, a lot of people on the ground are saying, yeah, this is great, but we wouldn't have written that program or that policy this way. We would have done it differently, emphasizing other issues and other relationships that need to be accounted for. And the one that is consistently unaccounted for, and what I try to emphasize in my essay, is culture. Culture is extremely important in the Pacific. A lot of times Australian policymakers just sweep away culture because they assume culture is the source of conflict and tension. They've presented it that way for years with respect to thinking about things like the arc of instability in Melanesia. They assume that culture is just causing a lot of problems in the Pacific, where it's domestic violence or tribal warfare. And that's not actually the kinds of cultures and traditions that Pacific people are trying to protect. They're trying to protect their relationships with each other, their kinships, and their relationships with the environment. And that's where the climate policy becomes relevant, because it's not just a scientific problem, it's not just an environmental problem, but it's part of a whole complex relationship that Pacific people have with each other and their environment. So they would write their adaptation or mitigation policies differently if they were allowed to actually think it through from a cultural perspective.